We're holding on Lamadimol Umidbay's 10 lines from the bottom. We talked about we started talking about the brachos of klolos on Har Grizim and Har Eval, and the pasuk mentions on the day that you cross the Yarden, then you're supposed to do that. We discussed yesterday, does it actually mean on the day, that literally on that same day they did, in which case then we had the whole discussion, well, if it was near Shechem, isn't that a considerable distance from the Yarden? Later on in the parak, we're going to get back to that point and say that according to that opinion, it was in fact a nest that they were able to accomplish on that day. But we said there were other opinions. There's a possibility that maybe they were actually right near the Yarden, or even that they were supposed to make two big piles of dirt and call them Har Grizim and Har Eval and do it right there next to the Yarden, or that it was other mountains in that area, or even Tosfos had brought from the Yerushalmi that maybe it wasn't meant to be done on that day at all, but only after the 7 years of conquering and 7 years of dividing Eretz Yisrael. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the crossing of the Yarden itself. Tanarabon, Ketzat over Yisrael is the Yarden. How did the Jewish people cross the Yarden? So like this, first of all, B'chol Yoyim Oren Neseya Achashnei Degolim. Every other day, up until that point, the Oren would travel after two of the camps of the Jewish people. So we know from Parashas Bamidbar that the Jewish people were divided into four camps. You had the camp led by Yehuda, the one led by Reuben, etc. And the way it would work is, as the Pesukim described, is you would have the camp of Yehuda would start traveling. Then you'd have B'nai Gershon and B'nai Merari who would be carrying the structural pieces of the Mishkan, the Kroshim and the curtains and whatnot. Then after that the camp of Reuben would start traveling, and then B'nai Kohath would travel after them, carrying the Aron and the various other Kalim of the Mishkan. And then when they got that way, the idea being when they got to wherever they're going to stop, wherever they're going to be camping, then B'nai Gershon and B'nai Merari would have time to set up the Mishkan, and then B'nai Kohath could come and put in the Kalim. So that was how it normally went, that B'nai Kohath with the Aron would travel behind two Degolim, behind the camp of Yehuda and the camp of Reuben. The Hayyim Nosa Tchila. But this time, instead, the Aron went first. This time, the Aron went
ahead. What was the idea to have them travel behind Yehuda? I mean, after all, they came before Yehuda, didn't they?
Well, the idea is that this way, like the Oren is flanked by the Shvatim on different sides of it. I'll tell you in a second. Let's finish the description in the Gemara over here, and then I'll explain what Marsha says, the deeper reason why indeed they changed it now when they're going into Eretz Yisrael, why they changed the order of things. The idea would be that normally it's supposed to be between all the Jewish people, surrounded on all sides by Jewish people. By the way, you have Rashi mentions in a couple of places in Chumash and Machlokas in the Medrash, and I think in the Gemara also, when they traveled. Now we know when they camped in a square formation with three shvatim on each side, three to the north, three to the south, etc. Was it the same thing when they're traveling? They went in a box shape. And therefore, when we said the Aron went after two of the camps, what we mean is they started moving at that point, but they're still flanked on all four sides by Jews. Or do we mean that they went more or less single file first? They went single file, and in that case, it would mean that the Aron and the other Kalim are in front of the last two and behind the latter two. But we'll talk about in a minute what Marshall says, why now they changed things. So v'hayom nosatchila, now this time when they crossed the Yarden, the Oren went first. Shenema, as the pasuk says in Yeshua, Yeshua tells the people, Hine aroin abris, behold the Oren of the covenant, meaning that it includes, that it contains within it the luchos, which are the covenant, which represent the covenant between Hashem and the Jewish people, adoin kala oretz, of the Lord of the entire world, because this is the covenant that Hashem, who controls the entire world, made with you, that Oren, over lefnechem, is going to be going before you. So we see that the Oren was going ahead of them. So in fact, Marsha says the idea is, as long as they're outside Eretz Yisrael, so those are not holy lands, those are Talmudical lands, so therefore the Shekhinah had to rest in the midst of Bnei Yisrael, and therefore it had to be flanked on the different sides by the camps of the Jewish people. Now that they're coming into Eretz Yisrael, which is a holy land, now the Shekhinah can go ahead also as if like to demonstrate that Hashem is the boss of this land. Hashem is the, like, is the Odin, is the master and the God of this land specifically. Obviously Hashem rules the whole world, but Eretz Yisrael still is like his special territory, and therefore the Odin went ahead of them. Continues the Braisa. On every other day up until that point, the Levium carried the Aron. As we know, it was one of the things that Bnei Kohos carried. This time, when they crossed the Yarden, instead the Kohanim were to carry it. Marashah says this also fits with the idea that now we're saying we're coming into a place of greater Kedusha, so therefore the Kohanim do it. As the soles of the feet of the Kohanim who are carrying the Aron as they touch the Yarden, and the Yarden split. So we see that the Kohanim were carrying it. So Tanya, we learn further in a Braisa, actually.
One remark. You see that Eretz Yisrael, even before the conquest, had greater Kedusha than all the other lands. So what is all this machlokes?
What machlokes?
What is all this machlokes about Eretz Yisrael, whether it has Kedusha or it doesn't have Kedusha?
There's different degrees of Kedusha. There's Kedusha as far as that it was the land that Hashem created first and that he promised to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and so on and so on. And Eretz Yisrael, Avaya, Lekech, Abba. And then there's the Kedusha as far as matters of Halacha, as far as mitzvahs, atluyos, v'aretz, when they're in effect and when they're not. That the machlokas that you have is as far as that the mitzvahs at Lois Baretz are they that the original conquest remains in effect for all time and those mitzvahs at Lois Baretz are always in effect, or does that kedusha, that degree of kedusha, depend on their conquest and therefore once it was conquered away from them then it lost that kedusha and then it had to be remade and so forth? That's essentially the machlokas. But there's an intrinsic kedusha and then there's an additional kedusha on top of that. You know, you have in a similar way the Jewish people had a degree of kedusha before Matan Torah, but then still Hashem had to tell them at Matan Torah that you're going to be mamlechus kohenim v'goy kodesh, and that gave them an extra degree of kedusha that they didn't have before. So it's similar here. All right, carrying on. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Actually, there's a Girsa over here that takes out the word Tanya because it's not really, it's actually a continuation of the same Braisa. A lot of the Braisas that we're going to be quoting in the Gemara over here in these next couple of Dafim actually come from Tesefta on Masechta Sota. This is one of those Masechtas where the Tesefta is much longer than the Masechta itself, because it goes and expands a great deal on things that we talk about in the Mishnah over here, including the Seder of crossing the Yarden and various other things. Anyway, so Rabbi Yossi Omer, v'shloshim akomis nasu koyinim asa'orin. There are three places where we find that the koyinim carried the Aron. K'sha'ovros ha'yarden, when they crossed the Yarden, u'ch'shei sebos Yericho, and also shortly after that when they were surrounding Yericho. So they have for 6 days, they're marching around Yericho one time. And on the seventh day, which was actually Shabbos, they marched around Yericho seven times, and then they blew shofaros, and the city wall sank into the ground, and they captured the city. So all of that there was the Oren with the Kohanim, and then there were the soldiers, and the rest of the leading soldiers, Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, and then all the other soldiers. So again, the Kohanim were carrying the Oren, as it says in the Pesukim over there. And the third one is Ochshech Ziruho the Mekoimo. The third time is when they returned the Aron to its place, meaning, so eventually what you had is they eventually brought the Aron to Mishkan. They set up the Mishkan in Shiloh after their 14 years when they had conquered and divided out Israel. The Mishkan in Shiloh lasted 369 years. Then the Plishtim destroyed it and captured the Aron, as we have the whole story in Sefer Shmuel. To make a long story short, eventually the Aron was given back to the Jewish people. It stayed in the city of Kiryas Yearim for many years, and then David brought it to Yerushalayim to a tent they had set up for it in Yerushalayim. And so then also the Pesukim say that the Kohanim carried it. Actually, Tosfos points out that not to bring it to the tent in Yerushalayim, sorry, but rather but rather in Shloima's times, when they finally brought it into the Beis Mikdash, it's called Shechziruhu L'Mekoymai. They returned it to its proper place, meaning in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So this is the obviously that particular Kodesh HaKadoshim hadn't been built before. This is the first Beis Mikdash we're talking about, but we mean L'Mekoymai in the sense originally it was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim of the Mishkan, and now it's going back to the Kodesh HaKadoshim of the Beis Mikdash. So there also the Pasuk says that the Kohenim carried it. Tosfos points out that actually in Divrei Yomim, that's how it says in Melachim, but in Divrei Yomim it says the Levim carried it, and Tosfos says, okay, we find in a number of places where the Kohenim are carrying, or where the Kohenim are called Levim, because after all they are from Shevet Levi. And then Tosfos discusses possibilities about maybe the Kohenim carried it part of the way, and then the Levim carried it part of the way, and so forth. Anyway. Whatever the case, the Kohenim carried it there. The Rambam actually holds that the mitzvah, Ledurus, the mitzvah for future generations, is whenever the Arid is to be carried, it's to be carried by the Kohenim. The Ramban asks on that, what do you mean? From our Gemara, it seems that it was only these three times in history, and one of the Meforshim on the Rambam, on Sefer HaMitzvahs, one of the Meforshim called Megillas Esther, answers that the Rambam would say it means that there were these three times historically, but from then on, that sets a precedent that from now on, whenever the Arid is to be carried, then it's going to be carried by the Kohenim. All right, so let's continue with the discussion. Let's continue with the description of how they crossed the Yarden. As soon as the feet of the Kohenim who were carrying the Aron dipped into the water, so now they're crossing the Yarden from east to west. They've been in Eirei Yarden on the eastern side, and now they're crossing over into Eretz Yisrael. The moment the Kohenim's feet touched the water, right away the water started going back. So Rashi understands we don't literally mean backward. What we mean is, in other words, that it was as if like a dam had been placed in the water. The water that was downstream of there continued flowing downward toward the Dead Sea, as it usually does. But the water that was coming from upstream was stopped as if like a dam had been put up, and it started piling up water on top of water. The pasuk describes it as the Gemara is going to quote now. Komu neid echad, they stood like one pillar. So Shanema, as the pasuk says, "Chovoy noisei orin ada yarden regemer." As the people who were carrying the orin came to the yarden, so the water was cut off. The pasuk says, and the pasuk says, "Vayamdu hamayim hayodim milamayla." The water that was flowing downstream from above, from upstream, stopped. Kamu neid echad, they stood as one pillar. So that's it. So then there was dry land for the Jewish people to cross. Marsha discusses, actually, based on the continuation of the Gemara, that maybe it doesn't mean necessarily that the Gemara is going to say that the water piled up, but maybe, in fact, Marsha says there was actually a backflow of the water. When we say, maybe it's not exactly like Rashi is saying, that the water downstream continued flowing down and the water upstream just piled up. It may have been that actually the water upstream actually flowed backward for a while also in order to create more of an empty space over there for the Jewish people to be able to cross, and then started piling up water on top of water. Anyway, the Kama Goivan Shalmayim, so the Brayta continues, how tall did the column of water reach? Shnei Masa Mil Kenegin Machne Yisrael. 12 mil. Really, it says over here 12 mil by 12 mil, but the Foshim point out, can't really be. The Yarden is only 50 amas wide. So the better girsa, and Rashi seems to have this girsa, is just Shnei Masa Mil. 12 mil, Kenegin Machne Yisrael, which is the size of the Machne Yisrael. 12 mil is around, 12 mil is around 7 or 8 miles. So the water, again, though you have water continues to flow downstream from the Kinneret through the Yarden. So now that it's being blocked by the Kohenim standing over there with the Aron, so now it's piling up more and more on top until it reached a height of 12 mil, and then the Jewish people, meanwhile, are able to cross. But Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's how Rabbi Yehuda learns. But Amar Rabbi Elazar b'Rav Shimon, says, how could you say that it was only 12 mil? L'dvaracha, according to your logic, you have to ask, Adam Kale Mayim Kalin, what moves faster, people or water? Water flows faster downhill than people do. heavier in the Mayim column. You have to say water flows faster. Imkain, if you're going to tell me that it reached a height of only 12 mil and then it started coming down again, boy, Mayim b'shoyt finosim, then the water was going to come and flood them because if the whole camp is if the whole camp of the Jewish people was 12 mil, it is 12 mil by 12 mil. So therefore, so by the time you have the last people, the last Jews are crossing the Yarden, then the water is all the way back to its normal level, descended from that height of 12 mil. How is that going to work? Again, Marsha has a different understanding of Rashi. We're not so much talking about the water coming back down from that column that it made in piling up in the air, but rather we're talking about if we're saying that the water was that the water flowed backward for 12 mil. So you're saying that now it created a 12 mil wide space in the Yarden, but now you're telling me after that, then it started flowing back. So in that case, then how is that working? How are the Jewish people going to cross without getting wet? Ella, so rather Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says, it wasn't just 12 mil. Milamitrei mayim nigdoshin ba'olin. It teaches us then that the water was getting piled up and keep on piling up. Kippin al gabi kippin, like arches on top of arches. Yosem is shloish meis mil, more than 300 mil tall. A mil is about a kilometer, or is about 3/5 of a mile. So you're talking about, according to him, then more than 300 mil would come out to something like a 180 or 200 or so miles. Tosfos points out, by the way, that would have been far beyond even the level of the clouds. The Gemara elsewhere says that the clouds ride above the ground around 3 parsa, which is around 8 miles. Most clouds are lower than that, but the maximum that they ever reach normally is about that. But here we're saying 300 mil, which is a lot more than 3 parsa. So therefore, yes, it was far beyond the clouds. And Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi an opinion that it was visible even as far as Bavel. So here the Gemara is saying, Ad shiro oisim kol malchim mizrach ha-mairev. So it was so high up, the pile of water, that all the kings in the east and the west were able to see it. Shenema, as the Pasuk describes, after they crossed, Vayehi kishmoya kol malchim ha-emori asher ve'eivah ha-yadin yama, when all the kings of the Amorim who lived on the west side of the Yarden, meaning in Eretz Yisrael proper, and all the kings of the Knanim who lived near the sea coast, further west into Eretz Yisrael, they saw Esa Shehoiv Hashemes Mei Yarden Mei Bnei Yisrael Ad Avram, that Hashem had dried up the water of the Yarden in the presence of Bnei Yisrael until they were able to cross. So they all saw that. So we're saying they actually saw it. It's not just they heard about it. They saw that column of water. By Yimas Levavam, so the pasuk continues, their hearts melted, and they were so fearful, they had no spirit left in the presence of Bnei Yisrael. In other words, they were so terrified that made the Jewish people much more easily able to conquer and defeat them. So that's the point is, in other words, that we're saying that they had actually seen this pile of, this column of water, columns on top of columns. Rashi translates kippin actually as ulamos, hallways. So it was like hallways on top of hallways. So it was a huge, big, noticeable thing, and therefore they all saw it and they were all terrified. In fact, we find that earlier, a few days earlier, when Yeshua had sent the two Meraglim to Yericho, and they stayed overnight by Rochav HaZona, so she says to Yeshua's messengers, Ki shamaynu esha shahoy v'shashem esmei yamsu v'gomer, because we're so terrified, because we heard how Hashem dried up the waters of the Yamsu when you crossed. And she continues, V'nishma v'yimas l'lavenu, we heard, and our hearts were melted from fear. And again, no spirit stood up in any man anymore. So the point being, in other words, that we see, even though Kriyas Yamsuf had been many years earlier, they still were terrified by it even now, 40 years later. So all the more so now, when the Yarden was split. And then they were more terrified because they realized not just a nest from the past, now this is something that's happening right now. So Marsha also points out again that by Kriyas Yamsuf also we know, even though the Yamsuf was far away from Eretz Yisrael, but there's the famous Medrash that all the water and all the jars and kalim and whatnot in the whole world split. So they also saw what So they saw something happen, and afterwards they heard, the Pasuk actually mentions that they heard that that was because Hashem had split the Yam Suf from the Jewish people. So now they not only heard it, but they saw with their own eyes how the water split in their vessels and whatever, and that made them scared. And now all the more so when they're seeing this column of water that's resulting from them crossing the Yarden. Continues the Braisa. Oydem b'yarden. While the Jewish people are still in the Yarden, as they're crossing, Amar lahem Yeshua. So Yeshua tells them, "Du'u al ma'atem ovrim es ha'yarden." You should know what the purpose is that you're crossing the Yarden. The purpose is amanas shetevishu as yoshvei ha'aretz mipneichem. The purpose is that you should kick out the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael from your presence. In other words, don't think you're going to settle in the country and you can just live among the goyim and assimilate with them and whatever. No, you have to destroy them and defeat them and expel them from the country. Shenamar, as Moshe had previously told them, you should dispossess all the people who live in the land from your presence. So Yeshua tells them, imatim oisim kain, if you do that, mutav, then if you're accepting on yourself that you're going to do that, mutav, then good, then you'll cross the Yarden safely. And if not, then the water will come and drown oiseichem. Now, what is oiseichem? My oiseichem oisiv eschem means Yeshua is using an expression that includes me and that includes me and you. Oiseichem is like a word put together from oisi and ois and eschem, meaning in other words that we're all going to be drowned by the water if we don't accept this this deal on ourselves. In fact, Marsha points out that there's actually on the face of it, then the Braise is saying that the Tana of the Braise himself chose this unusual word Oseichem to hit to that. Marsha points out that actually you have at the end of Sefer Yeshua, you have when Yeshua is giving a speech to the Jewish people. And he warns them again to be careful to follow everything that Hashem says and to drive out the remaining goyim from Eretz Yisrael and so forth. And if not, he says, if you start worshipping Avodah Zarah and so forth, he uses the expression ad hashmidei oischem, that Hashem will destroy oischem. So the Gemara might conceivably be darshing over here from that word oischem. However, Marashal says maybe not, because after all, that speech was many years later when Yeshua was much older, not at the time of the splitting of the Yarden now. Whatever the case, the point is, Yeshua is telling them, don't think that I'm exempting myself from this. If you don't accept this condition, then I'm also going to be punished along with the rest of you. Next, continues the Braisa. Oydem by Yarden, still while they're in the Yarden, while they're still crossing the Yarden. On the other hand, Yeshua tells the people, now previously the Pasuk describes that he had designated 12 people for this purpose, one from each Shevet, and he tells them, Harimo lachem ish even achas al shichmai, each of you pick up one stone and put it on your shoulder, lemispar shivte Yisrael v'gomer, so you'll have 12 stones, one corresponding to each Shevet, uchtiv, and he tells them to put those stones, to set them up as a monument in the Yarden itself, at the place where the Kohanim had been standing. This would be a siman for future generations about how the Jewish people crossed the Yarden at that spot. The Pashtos, obviously, they stuck up above the water, and they were kind of a monument. There's an interesting explanation that says that the idea behind it was just like you move into a new house, you put up a mezuzah, so the same way this was meant to be kind of like the mezuzah of Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, they did that. They set up those stones over there, and then additionally, Yeshua told them to also take 12 stones from the Yarden and carry them with them. Those are going to be the ones that we mentioned before in the Mishnah, that they're the ones that they took to Har Gerizim and Har Evel and set up over there. So uchtiv. So the Pasuk says, L'man tia zois ois v'kirvachem. The purpose of this is that this should be a sign among you. Ki yish olun v'nechem macho lemer. When your children ask you and your descendants ask you in the future and they say, Moha avonim eila lachem, what are these stones for you? For Gomer? So then you tell them, that it's simon labonim sha'avru avos as a yardin. It's a simon for the children that their fathers crossed the yardin at this point. So here actually we're not talking yet about that. The next piece is going to talk about the ones that they took with them to Gilgal and then to Har Gerizim and Har Eval and so forth. But right now we're focusing on the ones that they set up in the Yarden itself. So the purpose of that is, as the pasuk says, when your descendants ask you why these are here, then you tell them these show this is the actual spot where we crossed the Yarden. Much later on, those stones were still visible for a long time later, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute. And in fact, the Gemara in Brachas tells us that if you go to the Yarden River and you see the place where they crossed, then you would make the Bracha she'asa nisim la'vaseinu b'makom nes la'vaseinu b'makom hazeh. Anyway, then Oydem by Yarden, still while they're crossing the Yarden, Omalahem Yeshua, then Yeshua tells them, besides for the 12 stones that you just set up in the Yarden itself, so besides that, Su'ulachem Mizem Mitrecha Yarden Mimatzav Ragle Akoyanim, take for yourselves from within the Yarden, from the place where the Koyanim's feet are standing, again, closer to the east bank of the Yarden, Hohen Shtem Esravonim, prepare 12 stones, So in other words, again, you have the ones that are set up in the Yarden itself, and then you have other ones that they're taking. V'havartim osim imachem, take them across the Yarden with you. V'inachtim osim mamolon asher talinu b'yaloi l'vagomer, put them up in the place, in the lodging place where you're going to be lodging tonight. So the braisa interjects in the pasuk. What does that mean? Yochol, you would think, b'chol molon u'molon. You would think that means they have to take them from one place to another. So the first night they're going and they camped in Gilgal, and later on they're going to be camping in another place and so forth. Maybe it means they have to take the stones with them every place. No, tamad l'marsha t'luno boya loyla. Therefore, he continues and tells them to the place where you're going to be staying tonight, meaning they set them up in Gilgal and then they remain there. Later on, the Gemara is going to explain, in other words, that it comes out there were actually three sets of 12 stones each. There were the ones that were left in the Yarden as a monument right there, sticking up above the water. You had the ones that they set up in Gilgal, and later on you had the ones that they set up on Har Gerizim and Har Eval. The Gemara is going to mention that later. So those things were all accomplished while they're crossing the Yarden. Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi another thing that was done while they're crossing the Yarden, is while they were crossing the Yarden is when the Jewish people accepted on themselves Hanistoris. Now we have like this, the pasuk in Parashat Nitzavim says Hanistoris l'Hashem Elokeinu, the hidden things belong to Hashem, meaning among other things that if a Yid does an Aveira in secret, then it's up to Hashem to punish him because we're not going to know about it. Ban Niglus, but the ones that are revealed are Lanu Olavaneinu Ad Olam. But the Yerushalmi brings that while they were crossing the Yarden, Yeshua made them also accept the Nistoris. They have a responsibility that even if a Yid is doing an Aveira in secret, they have a responsibility to do whatever they can to find out about it and then to take appropriate steps. And the Gemara continues over there that you see that, because later on that Ochon stole from the spoils of Yericho, and the Pashtus were assuming that it was done in secret, and many people were killed afterwards in the following battle. With that said, though, the Bavli seems to, in Sanhedrin, seems to say not like that, and rather that then Mephoshim also on the Pasuk explained that there were other people who knew of what Ochan had done. Tosfos also brings from the same Yerushalmi that in Yavne, that was changed. When the Chachamim were in Yavne, after the second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, then a Baskel came out and said, Ein lachem esek ministoris, you don't have to worry about the Nistoris anymore. The Pashtus, the idea would be, because at that point, where the Golos is beginning, and now the Jewish people are going to be dispersed all over the world, so it's really impossible to keep track of the Nistoris anymore, as compared to when all the Jewish people were in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore Hashem is, so to speak, giving them a break, and saying, we'll go back to the way it is in the Torah, that the Nistoris are up to Hashem to deal with, and you just have to deal with the Nigla. Anyway, the Yerushalmi says, Tosfos is bringing that all of that took place while they were crossing the Yarden as well. So Marashah explains also when we're saying each of these things, Odom by Yarden, that this is actually, this could be, now before we had Machlokas of Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon at the top of the Amud, how much did the water flow backwards? According to Rabbi Yehuda, only 12 mil, and according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, piled up over 300 mil. So now, Marashah says, all of this might be only according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. He says there was plenty of time to do all these things, whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, how would you have enough time? As it is, they barely had enough time to cross. On the other hand, he says maybe not. Maybe in fact, maybe in fact it would go according to everybody. Maybe even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that that the water stopped long enough for them to do all of that. Marshall also says actually that it's not necessarily that there were different sets of stones. The ones that they took, I mean, there were the ones that they set up in the Yarden, but then the same ones that they took right then are the ones that they eventually brought to Har Gerizim and Har Evel, and they wrote the Torah on them, etc., like we learned in the Mishnah. But afterwards they took them to Gilgal and set them up permanently over there. So according to that, then it would mean they weren't set up permanently on Har Evel; they were set up permanently in Gilgal. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Amr of Yehuda, Abba Chalafda, Rabbi Eliezer ben Masya, Vachanina ben Chachinai, these three Chachamim, Rabbi Yossi, it says on the side over here, it's supposed to be. Anyway, Abba, so that would make sense, because Abba Chalafda means my father Chalafda. Rabbi Yossi's father is in fact Rabbi Chalafda. Anyway, so he and Rabbi Eliezer ben Masya and Chanania ben Chachinai, Omdu al Osan Avonim, they once went to check out and figure out the size of those stones that were standing in the Yarden. They figured out that each one weighed 40 saw. A saw, strictly speaking, is a measure of volume, not of weight, but we mean, in other words, each one had the volume of 40 saw and weighed appropriately as much as whatever rocks weigh as compared to a certain quantity of water. Ugmiri, now we have the Kabbalah, the Tu'una, we know for a fact. The tu'una, the madli inish lakaspe, whatever a person carries on his own shoulder, tilted the tu'una havi, is one third of what he can carry if he's is one third of what he's able to carry if he's carrying together with other people. So in other words, so if a person can carry 40 saw by himself, then if he's carrying together with other people, he's actually able to carry 120 saw, three times as much. So now the Gemara says, based on this, you can calculate. The size of the grapevine of the cluster of grapes that the Meraglim brought back from Eretz Yisrael. So further on, the Gemara is going to digress and talk more because of this about the Meraglim. But first, we're going to explain a minute if we say the stones that each of the 12 people carried from the Yarden each weighed 40 saw. So now, on the other hand, the Meraglim, 8 of them, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, 8 of them together carried the cluster of grapes back from Eretz Yisrael and Parshas Shlach. So therefore it must have weighed 120 saw per person. So 120 saw times 8 would be 960 saw. A saw is one third of the volume of a mikveh. In terms of weight, in terms of the weight of water, it would be around 50 or 60 gallons or so. So a saw is 1/40 of a mikveh. A mikveh is 40 saw. So he was saying 120 saw. So you're talking the volume of 24 mikvahs. A mikvah is around 200 gallons, give or take, of water. So you're talking, you're talking 24 times that. So it was an enormous grapevine. So how do we know that 8 of them were carrying it? Shenema, the Pasuk says, Vayisa'uhu b'moit b'shnoyim. The Pasuk says they were carrying
it. How many says? You said 140 says?
So we said altogether 960 saw. Because we're saying 8 people carried it, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain. Each one, when you're carrying something with somebody else, so you share the burden between them. Therefore, each person is able to handle 120 saw. So if there were 8 of them, that means there were 960 saw. Since there were 40 saw in a mikveh, that means it was 24 times the volume of a mikveh. So that's how much that one grapevine weighed. So the Gemara says, how do we know that? Shenema, the Pasuk says, Vayisa'u.
24 times is, yeah.
Yeah. Vayisa'u b'moit b'shnoi. What? Let's go ahead, and then we'll see if it's clear. Vayisa'u b'moit b'shnoi. And the Pasuk says they carried it on a pole with two. Now, Mimashma Shanemba Bamoit, any Adesha Bishnaim, if it was carried on a pole, wouldn't that automatically mean there's two? Whenever you're carrying something on a pole, you have one person carrying one end and one carrying the other end. So the Pasuk doesn't even need to say the word Bishnaim. Obviously, a pole implies itself that you're carrying it by two people. So the Maharal says that the Maharal points out a different way of explaining it, that if it was just one person carrying it, then it wouldn't even need to say that he used a pole. It would be all the same if he carried it in his hands. Rashi also points out that the diuk is from the word vayisa'uhu, which means that they carried it, which again is a plural. Anyway, so what does this mean? Ma tam lema bishnayim. So what does it mean then? Why does it say the word bishnayim? Bishnei moitos, it means they use two poles. So each pole is carried by two, but Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, on top of that, Rabbi Yitzchak said it wasn't only two poles, turtani, the turtani, the turtani. It means that there was a burden and a burden under the burden. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains that there were many, they made a whole framework of poles over here. That way the bottom ones are able to help support the top ones. So Rashi describes, and you have a diagram that's brought in various places, that you had two poles going in one direction, and then underneath them you had two poles forming an X. So altogether it was like an X with two other poles crossing them. So now you have altogether four poles that are being used, and each pole has two ends, and therefore eight people are carrying them. Rashi explains how do we get that is because since, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second, that Yeshua and Kalev didn't take anything, as the Gemara is going to explain in a minute why, and two of the other Meraglim took, the Pasuk says they also brought back Mina Te'enim and Mina Rimonim, they brought back a fig and a pomegranate, so one Meraglim carried one of those and one carried the other, that leaves eight Meraglim to carry the cluster of grapes, and therefore Rabbi Yitzchak is understanding that they had to arrange it in such a way that eight people could carry it, so they would do it like that. There's a few other different explanations among Rishonim and Achronim how exactly the layout was. Tosfos Shantz says, and you have a diagram in Tosfos Shantz, that it was, they made the framework kind of like a tic-tac-toe with two poles going in one direction and two others crossing them at right angles. And then they had a frame to be able to put the grapevine on top of that. And again, one person carrying each end. Marsha has yet another understanding of it. He says what it means is they had the Marshal says that, he has a gear set that they had the two poles, they had a framework, he explains actually the way, so Tosfos further talks about what turtani means, the word turtani means a balanced scale, and Tosfos describes yet another possibility, and the Marshal draws it out, that they had two poles with a netting attached between them, and then they had at the end of each of the poles, they had a poles, a little piece sticking out at right angles for two people to carry it. So you'd have two people carrying at each of four corners. If you look in the back of the Gemara in Marashal, you'll see a diagram of the way he draws it over there. So it looks kind of like a letter H with a thick crossbar, and then on that crossbar there's a netting, and then the thing is sitting on top of that. Whatever the case, the point is that eight of them were carrying it, and were saying altogether it weighed 960 so. So Hoketzad, so how does it work out? Shmoina Nosu Eshkol, so eight of them are carrying the grapevine. Echad Nosu Rimon, one was carrying the pomegranate. Echad Nosu Te'ena, one was carrying a fig. So that counts for 10 Meraglim. Yeshua V'Kolev V'Nosu Klum, and Yeshua and Kolev didn't carry anything. Now, why not? Iboyis Ema Mashum Dachashivi. One answer is because they were very important, and therefore it would be beneath their dignity to be carrying them. I Moshe Rabbeinu, So I, Moshe Rabbeinu, told them to. There was actually a sicha where the Rebbe discusses Rashi sicha. Rashi doesn't mention the point about whether they were important. He focuses on the second reason the Gemara is going to give, that because they knew the Meraglim are bringing it for bad purposes, so they realize that the Meraglim, even though Moshe told them to, they're putting in their own agenda and doing it for nefarious purposes, because they want to be able to claim to the Jewish people that just like these fruits are unusually large, so also the people there are unusually tall and gigantic, and we're not going to be able to conquer them, and therefore they didn't want to be involved in that. But according to the first version over here, we're saying because they were important, after all, Yeshua was Moshe's personal Talmud, Kalev was his brother-in-law, he was married to Miriam, so therefore they were potter from it. The The other reason is because they didn't want to join in the plot of the Meraglim to speak badly about Eretz Yisrael, and they knew the Meraglim are taking the fruit for that purpose. Because otherwise, in other words, the point is, if the Meraglim didn't mean that, they would have taken normal size food. Okay. So now getting back to, so that was a short digression to talk about the Meraglim. Further on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to start talking in more detail about the Meraglim. But first, let's finish off as far as the crossing of the Yarden that we started discussing before. So the Gemara says, Pligibar Rab Ami and Rab Yitzchak Napcha. Rab Ami and Rab Yitzchak Napcha disagree within what we said before. We had Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. How tall did the water pile up? According to Rabbi Yehuda, 12 mil. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, more than 300 mil. Or again, according to Marsha, the question is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it didn't really pile up at all. It just flowed backwards for 12 mil and then started flowing back in the normal direction. And according to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, piled up. Anyway, so Pligi bar Rab Ami and Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha. Rab Ami and Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha disagree within that. How do we understand from that what formation the Jewish people traveled in? So Chad Omer, one of them says, L'divir Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, comes out, K'chanayos and Avru, they crossed the Yarden in the same way as they camped. Now, when they camped, the camp was 12 by 12 mil. So now also they did that. So therefore, they crossed 12 mil across, and therefore the water had to back up and stand up to that height. So Tosfos explains now that the Machna was 12 mil by 12 mil. The fact is, the Yarden is only 50 amos wide, so how would they be able to do that? So Tosfos says, okay, it means they kept the same width, but they squeezed in along the length. In other words, like this, instead of the camp trailing backwards for 12 mil, now they have that, as they're going into the Yarden, they're coming closer and closer to one another so that all of them are able to fit in the bed of the Yarden as Yeshua is giving them the instructions that we said before. And then Tosfos makes calculations how it would work out. And also Tosfos points out, now what about we said that they had to take the stones out of the Yarden and so forth. So doesn't that mean that there needed to be more time for the water to pile up even according to Rabbi Yehuda? Tosfos says sure, but it didn't reach a whole nother mil. It was somewhere between 12, when he says 12 mil, he doesn't mean exactly 12 mil. He means somewhere between 12 and 13 mil. So that would account for the extra time for them to pick up the stones.
This was all happening when they crossed over to go out during Yeshua's time?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about during Yeshua's time, exactly. So according to Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha and Rabbi Ami, one of them is saying that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it comes out that they were crossing in the same formation as they traveled, as they camped, namely 12 mil wide, L'divir, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, B'zachar Ze'ovru, whereas according to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, they went single file, and each one shevet, then another shevet, and then so forth, and therefore, according to him, you needed a much larger time to cross, therefore, according to him, the water had to pile up to 300 mil. So in fact, Tosfos points out that according to that, it would mean that actually, so he and Rabbi Yehuda are really arguing about two things. On Amud Aleph, he had pointed out to Rabbi Yehuda that water flows faster than people do. So how could it have been only 12 mil? Then it would come and flood them. Now he's saying that not only that, but also I disagree about the formation in which they traveled across the Yarden, and therefore for that reason alone, you need more time for them. And again, Tosfos goes into a whole calculation about how I don't know why he would require 300 mil. So again, they did compress themselves into a smaller space, but still, you still could have, that Tosfos says, they may not have been going literally single file. You have, let's say, for example, they're going 10 abreast, but fine. You have 10 people are crossing, and then behind them, the next group of 10, and so on and so forth. Anyway, that's a point of one opinion. V'chad Omer, between Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchak Napcha, the other one says, Bein Mar, Pachaniyasan Aru. Both of them agree that the Jewish people crossed the Yarden in the same formation as when they camped, meaning that it was 12 mil wide. The Machlokas just Mar Sova Odom Kal. Rav Yehuda holds that a person can go as fast as water. Omar Sova Mayim Kal, and whereas Rav Elazar Rav Shimon holds that water travels faster. Again, Tosfos points out, obviously everybody knows when we're talking about when water is coming downhill, of course it goes faster than a person. But here, since we're saying it piled up, so now the water is flowing slower in order to pile up over there, because not water doesn't usually flow uphill after all. So therefore people could be going faster than them. So according to him, then, so again, according to one opinion, you have two machloikas in between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. Number one, what formation did they cross in, single file or all the Jewish people abreast? And therefore also how tall the water had to pile up. Whereas according to the other opinion, everybody agrees that they went kachani yosan and with the whole 12 mil across, and the machloikas is only which would travel faster, the water or the people. Okay. Now getting back to the Merdaklim. The Pasuk says, Shlachzer Sehir. Now the Gemara is going to continue from here until the middle of Daf Lamed Hey, talking about the ins and outs of the story of the Merdaklim. So the Pasuk says, Shlach Lecha Anoshim. Hashem sends to Moshe, send for yourself people. Omer Shlach is Shlach Lecha Midaitcha. Hashem is saying, send for yourself, meaning according to your own das. I'm not telling you to do it. The Jewish people want you to send Meraglim. I'm not going to stop you, but I'm not telling you to do it either. Because, after all, how could a person choose a bad choice for himself? Meaning, Rashi says, in other words, since the whole story of the Meraglim ended in such a disaster, obviously it can't be that Hashem, who knows everything that's going to happen, would have told them to do that in a way that's going to end up with such a disaster. So therefore, we have to understand that Moshe did it on his own initiative. Marashov gives a different explanation. He says that it means and he brings from Medrash that you have Rashi himself brings it actually in Parshas Dvarim that Hashem is saying, you know what, I'm telling them it's Eretz Tova Rechava and all the other Eretz Zavas Chol Vash and so forth. So I'm being like a seller who has no problem. You want to buy this donkey or this car or whatever from me. I don't mind you putting it through its paces. You can go ahead and test drive it. You can whatever, and I have no problem because I know it's a good one. So you should have realized you. Jewish people should have realized at that point, well, then obviously it must really be good that Hashem is okay with us sending Meraglim to check it out, and therefore they should have said, in that case, we don't even need the Meraglim. Hashem's word is good enough for us, because why would Hashem tell them to send, Meraglim if he knows that they could come back with a bad report? So Moshe is telling the people that you should have realized that there's no reason for you to send Meraglim at all, that Hashem is telling you it's a good land, and therefore you should know that's how it is. So behind the stiv, this is what it means. Later on in Parshas Devarim, when Moshe tells over the story, he says, Vayita be'enei adavar, the matter was good in my eyes, and that means, Omer Shlokish, be'enei, v'lo de'en of Shalmokim, Moshe is informing them it was good in my eyes, I was okay with sending them, but Hashem was not. Hashem did not approve of it, and that's why Hashem told me you want to do it, then do it on your own. There is Marashah makes a point actually that really Hashem would have been okay with them sending two Meraglim like later on Yeshua did just to check out what's the best place to go and enter Eretz Yisrael and start conquering it. But instead, the Shvatim insisted on sending 12 Meraglim, one for each Shevet, and therefore so that eventually caused the problems because then they came back with a bad report and all the other Shvatim believed them. There is a sicha where they never talks about the idea. The deeper idea behind it is that Hashem is telling Moshe, we're beginning now the type of avoda of Yisrusa de Losata. From now on, it's not going to be me telling you every step of the way what to do, because after all, Eretz Yisrael, you're going to be living in the natural way. So therefore, the beginning of it now is you decide on your own whether it's valid to send Meraglim. I'm not giving you the instruction, because that would be, that's the hanhoga that we had until now, but now it has to start being different. Now you guys have to start standing on your own 2 feet. Okay, the pasuk continues that in Parshas Devarim, when Moshe is telling over the story, he says that the people said, we want to send Meraglim, v'yachbru lanu asa'aretz. Now literally, v'yachbru means they should dig out the land. But I mean, in other words, on the surface, it means that they should ferret out, they should find out all the information about the land. But Omer Pri Ba'aba means Meraglim l'niskavnu ela l'bosh toshal Eretz Yisrael. The Meraglim were looking only to badmouth Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, when the Jewish people, in other words, we don't mean the Meraglim themselves. Rashi explains that it means when the Jewish people are saying to send Meraglim, means they had that in mind. They want to look for the derogatory things about Eretz Yisrael. And we know that, because here you have the word v'yachru, which again literally means to dig out, but still, it's an unusual expression. The word would usually be v'yiraglu, or v'yasuru, or something like that. In fact, in Parshas Shlach, it says v'yasuru. So, you have a pasuk that says that the moon will be ashamed, and the sun will be embarrassed, because it means the people who worship them will be embarrassed. Anyway, the point is the sun and the moon themselves will be embarrassed that people were worshipping them. Anyway, we see the word b'chofra means to be embarrassed. So the same way b'yachru l'onos ha'aretz means they want to be able to see the embarrassing things about Eretz Yisrael. And they're sending the Meraglim with that motivation to begin with. We know there's any number of sichas where they never talks about the idea. It actually goes all the way back to, it goes all at least as far back as the Kutei Torah, that the idea is that the Jewish people really wanted to just stay in the Ruchnius, in the Ruchniistic environment that they had in the Midbar, rather than going into the Gashmius of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore, like, they're looking for any excuse to make that happen. The pasuk continues, the Eila Shmoisam, these were their names, and it starts listing the names of all the Meraglim, Lamate Ruven Shamur Ben Zakur, and it lists the 12 Meraglim and their father's names. So Amar Yitzchak, Dabarzeh Masoras V'Yadeinu Me'Aviseinu. We have the following Masorah from our ancestors. Meraglim Al Shem Maaseyim Nikru. The Meraglim, our name, are actually, their names represent the bad things that they did. The Onu, like also V'Yadeinu, but we have in our hands, we don't know how to Daushin, Ela Echad, only one of them. Namely, the Meraglim from Shevet Asher is named Sesur Ben Michal. So why was he called that? Sesur is Shasoser Meisav Shalakadosh Baruch Hu. The word Shasur represents that he Sosar the words of Hashem. Rashi explains the word Sosar means he contradicted. So he contradicted the deeds of Hashem. So Hashem is saying that it's Eretz Zavas Chol B'Dvash, and he's claiming that it's not like that. Marsha explained it differently, that Sosar means he hid. He pretended like the deeds, the things, the nisim that Hashem did for the Jewish people are hidden, and he pretended as though they don't exist. So therefore he's called Sasur. And Michal, and his father is called Michal, Sha'osa Atme Moch, the way he talks, he made himself, which is a euphemism for Hashem, as if he's poor and incapable. So it's like he's claiming, as most of the Meraglim did, that Hashem is too weak, Chas V'Shalom, to conquer the nations of Eretz Yisrael. And so therefore, the word moch means weak or incapable. So therefore, for that, in token of that, it's mentioned with his father's name, Michal. And again, Maharsha explains that it means that he's saying he didn't believe. He didn't believe that Hashem has the capability of giving them food in Eretz Yisrael. The Rebbe talks about a sicha in Chelik Yud Ches where the Rebbe analyzes this. First of all, the Rebbe says Rebbe Yitzchak doesn't mean that we don't know of drashas for any of the other meraglim. In fact, Medrash Tanchuma, you can find drashas on every single one of them about why is the one called Shamua and why his father's name is Zakur and so on and so forth. What Rebbe Yitzchak means is that out of all the names of the meraglim, our ancestors who are on a higher level, they needed lessons in Avodas Hashem that are learned from all of them. But in our generations now, we only need the lesson, Olaloi also be a danu, that comes up as a practical thing for our Avodah, only one of them, the lesson that's embodied by the name Sassur ben Michael. And so the Rebbe explains, the Sassur Mais of Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't mean like Rashi that he contradicted, doesn't mean like Marsha that he hid, rather Sassur means he broke down, he wrecked. That these are, he and his fellow Meraglim are trying to wreck the whole concept of going into Eretz Yisrael and working in Olam HaTikun, and they're saying that Hashem is moch, that Hashem, so to speak, doesn't have the power to save their ruchnius in Eretz Yisrael. They're going to end up getting enmeshed in gashmius, and they're not going to be able to continue living as according to Torah and mitzvah. So therefore, so now, then we're saying that's an important point for our avoda to realize it's not like that. We have to do avoda b'poyel. We have to do avodah in the actual world, in the world of Olam HaTikun, and not think that Hashem is that Hashem doesn't have the capability of making us able to withstand the challenges of Gashmius. So therefore, sort of Yitzchak is saying that that's the only one we have, meaning that's the one that's relevant to our avodah. Amr Rav Yechanan, but then Rav Yechanan continues, Af Onu Noimar, we can also say that there's another one we can dash in. One of the Meraglim from Shevet Naphtali is called Nachbi Ben Vofsi. Nachbi represents Shehechbi Dvarav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He hid and concealed the words of Hashem. So again, Rashi says that Hashem, he's not saying what Hashem said. Hashem said that it's a good land, and he's hiding and concealing that, and saying differently. And Vofsi, and his father's name Vofsi, means Shepisa Amidos of Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He stepped over, he skipped over the midos of Hashem. Instead of saying, like Hashem said, that it's a good land, he jumped over them and didn't say them the way they're supposed to be. Marsha again explains the point to his shita that Nachbi ben Vofsi represents the idea of again that he's saying that he pretends he pretends as though Hashem doesn't have the ability to provide for them to provide for them in Eretz Yisrael. And in that sicha that Rebbe talks about, that what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is, now that we're beyond Rabbi Yitzchak's generation, on the other hand, we do need a lesson from the opposite. We need to know, it's true, the lesson from Meraglim is to realize the importance of Avodah B'Poel, but we mustn't forget that there is also, after all, you have to have Av of a Yira to go with it, and that's represented by Nachbi Ben Vofsi. You can't just hide over the Midas and jump over the Midas of Hashem and say, we don't care about the Midas. As long as you're doing Ma'isi B'Poel, you do need the Midas of Av of a year as well, in order to make you avoid a meaningful. So it's both. Going on, the pasuk says Vayalu b'Negev v'yovrei ad Chevron. The pasuk says they went up in the Negev and he came to Chevron. So Vayavoyumi b'Olei. Shouldn't it say they came to Chevron? All the Meraglim. So Amar Rav Malam to Peter Shkolev Matzas Meraglim. This teaches us that Kolev separated himself from the ideas of the Meraglim. They're ready to go and start speaking badly about Eretz Yisrael. He separated from them. He went and bowed down and prostrated himself by the Kvarim of the Ovis in Chevron. Omar Lahan, he says to them, Avoisei, Batu Olai Rachim, Davin for Rachmanos on my behalf, She'en Notzol Matzas Meraglim, that I should be saved from the ideas of the Meraglim. So therefore, Vayavoy, only he in person came to Chevron, unlike all the other Meraglim. So why does he have to daven for himself? He says, Yeshua, Kvabikash Moshe Olav Rachmim, because Yeshua, Moshe already davened for him, for Rachmanus, that he should be saved from their ideas. Shenema Vayikra Moshe Loshea Ben Nun Yeshua. When he renamed him Yeshua, means he said, Ko Yeshua HaMeatzas Meraglim. Hashem should save you from the advice of the Meraglim. But Kolev is saying, I didn't have anybody to daven on my behalf, therefore I have to daven on my own behalf. This Gemara over here is one of the major sources that the post can bring for the concept of going and davening by a tzaddik's kever and asking for the tzaddik to be a guta better for you in Shemayim. One of the, or Gemara over here is one of the sources for that we see that Kolev did exactly that. Why Taka did Moshe daven for Yeshua and not for Kolev? There's many different explanations. Among them is because Yeshua is his Talmud, and it would reflect badly on Moshe Rabbeinu if he goes bad. There's a sicha in Chelek Beis where the Rebbe talks about the idea. Moshe knew Yeshua is going to be the next leader of the Jewish people, and a leader has to be able to go deal with each person on his own level, and therefore Moshe had more reason to be concerned that Yeshua might follow the level, might get into the ideas of the Meraglim over there and figure that he has to assimilate that idea into his own personality in order to eventually be able to lead them, and therefore Moshe has to daven for Yeshua to not do that. So therefore, so the Gemara finishes, v'hainu d'chtiv, that's what it means. The pasuk says, v'abdi cholev, Hashem later on says, my servant cholev, ekev hoisa ruach acheres imoi, because there was a different spirit with him, therefore he's going to come into Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, what it means is called a different spirit means that he was different than the other meraglim, that he separated himself from them. And also, the pasuk goes on to say, therefore Hashem says, I'm going to bring him to the land where he came, and his descendants will inherit it. That means particularly his descendants inherited Chevron. Later on, in Sefer Yoshua and Shoftim, it says exactly that Kalev was given as his descendants' portion, and Eretz Yisrael was given the area of Chevron precisely for that reason, because he had taken the initiative to go there and daven by the Ma'aras Machpelah, to daven that Hashem should help him withstand the ideas of Meraglim. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and talk more about the ins and outs of the story of the Meraglim.